Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. All right, we're back. It's 13 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Now, why would you want that number? The reason you might want that number is so you could ask me or my friend and our special guest, Jonathan Zuck, a question. Jonathan is the president of Association for Competitive Technologies out of the Washington, D.C. area. They're the people who, one of the groups that helped to take care of the public and interest of the IT industry, the information technology industry in Washington, D.C., and Jonathan has been with us quite a few times before. He joins us a couple times a month or so to help us stay updated on what's coming around the corner at us and for us with regard to public policy for high-tech and information technology, for marketplace policy, for the gadgets and the software and all the stuff that's involved in this most important component of our personal and professional lives. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here.
It's good to have you with us, and I know you've got some good topics to talk to us about, and I've got some things also that I always kind of collect up and to try to talk to you about. One of the things that I really like talking about, and I know you've got it on your mind today, Jonathan, that's really exciting to me, and that's this issue of broad bandwidth.
Yeah,
talk about that first.
Sure. I mean, one of the things.
Explain to my audience what broad bandwidth means.
Sure. The issue with broadband is kind of increasing the speed with which you can access things on the internet. I mean, the huge majority of people right now are accessing the internet through modems, and not even the fastest possible modem. Most people are still using 13.3 modem.
Or 28s.
Or 28.8s, exactly. So there's 56K modems that are a little bit better, but there are options out there that will provide access that's 10 times as fast to get to the internet. And when you get that fast, it actually can bring about a qualitative difference in what the internet can provide as opposed to just sort of a quantitative one. I mean, as you go up increments of modems, the web pages, you know, appear a little bit faster. The graphics display a little bit faster. Some of that has to do with your speed of your computer, too. But when you start to get to a really what we call a wide pipe into your computer, what you can do on the internet begins to really flesh out in a qualitative way.
The way I've had it, one of the ways that someone explained it to me that I thought was really a good analogy was he was saying, imagine that you've got all this big fat glob of information that you're currently trying to squeeze through a drinking straw. And that once everyone is connected, or once anyone is connected to one of these big pipes, or one of these large pipes, as you call it, the broad bandwidth connectivity, once that's connected, then it, instead of being squeezed through that drinking straw, it literally free falls through this big pipe.
And that's exactly true. Or gets, like a fire hose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's interesting about it is that most people aren't trying to squeeze things to a drinking straw because there aren't that many things out there that take advantage of broadband because it's not so widespread yet.
Right.
But it's things like video, live video, and there's been some really important technological innovations like Real Networks has done work in so-called streaming video so that it downloads a little bit of it at first and starts playing it while it's downloading more of it, which gives you, you know, a reasonable experience. But with broadband, you could have, you know, full-blown television shows playing full screen.
Movies.
And movies on your computer.
Ball games.
Interactive games, like virtual reality games, and the same games that you play on Nintendo, you could be playing against somebody else on the internet if you both had broadband connections.
Well, what's happening now, and see
video conferencing, et cetera.
Oh yeah, now that's going to change a lot of different industries when that happens, and let's talk about that in a second. But what I was going to say is that I have capability on my website, audio streaming, that is actually pushing the connectivity technology a little bit, because there are some things that I'm looking forward to once more people are connected with broadbands. Then they will be able to enjoy the streaming of audio over the internet more than they are now.
They sure will. I mean, there's still some hiccups and things associated with trying to get audio information through a narrow pipe. Mm-hmm. It'll be cleaned up a lot as more people get some form of broadband connection. There's a number of different varieties of broadband.
So it's sort of like, help me if I'm, make sure I'm saying this right, Jonathan, it's sort of like the capability technology to create this capability is rocking and rolling, but the connectivity technology, the physical logistical connectivity to you between your unit, your computer, and the availability of that, the producer of that productivity, that capability, I should say, is not the same. It's sort of like having this great race car, but the tires that are available today are not really good enough to make it go as fast as it could go.
Yeah, well, it's almost like the roads aren't good enough,
okay,
right?
That's the better way.
The roads are full of potholes.
Exactly.
So you have a race car, but
good for you.
You keep tearing the axles off your car.
Good for you. That's the right way to say it. and I'll tell you, now let's talk about some examples of broadband with that are available, that are actually some of it's becoming available to individuals right now.
It certainly is. I mean, what's been around for some time for businesses is something called a T1 line, which
right.
is a very expensive broadband line that goes into a business. I mean, you
can
get that in your home too.
$1,000 a month, can it?
Exactly, it can be about $2,000 a month, which is a little different than what you're paying for your internet access now, which is more like $20 a month.
Right.
And then there was a middle of the road option that offered about a tenth of the speed of a T1. But it was about twice the speed of a modem, and that was called ISDN.
Right.
That was a little bit more reasonably priced, but...
But that phone line could cost you anywhere from $100 to $250 a month.
Exactly. It could cost you, depending on how much you used it, it could cost you still quite a bit of money.
Plus,
you've got to have
Terminator equipment, because you can't plug an ISDN phone line right into a most computer modem.
Right. You need a special modem.
Yeah, exactly. Hang on, because we've got some more different kinds of broadband with examples that we're going to get Jonathan to talk to us about when we come back after these messages. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. All right, we are back. It's 24 after the hour. Nothing like the little Joe Cocker to get the old blood boiling, right, Jonathan?
That's right.
Jonathan Zuck, ladies and gentlemen, he is the president of the Association for Competitive Technology. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're talking about the high-tech issues. That's what I call it. He calls it information technology. And you say tomato, I say tomato. We're talking about broadband connections to the internet.
I mean, one of the interesting trends is something called convergence, where everybody's getting in everybody else's business. So the phone companies are becoming computer companies and data providers, as well as voice, et cetera. So
and cable, don't forget throwing in,
cable television is converging with the data, et cetera. So the high-tech IT distinction may start to go away. But
Exactly. good point.
Those were old broadband connections we were talking about, and what are some of the newer ones that are coming out from consumer-oriented companies are the important ones are something called DSL, or Digital Subscriber Line, and cable modem, and those are going to be and satellites is the third one that's a little bit further behind,
right.
but it's coming on fast.
All right,
those are going to be the ones that are really designed to reach the consumer.
Tell us now, DSL is something that's becoming available in key markets, basically in major markets. I know they've got it available in the Washington D.C. area.
They've got it available in a number of metropolitan areas where there's a high density.
But out in the hinterland, out in flyover America, it's not available as much.
Well, it's just very, very expensive to put into place.
Yeah,
so
but it's on the way.
Right now they're putting it in places where there's a lot of houses in a row. A lot of people are hoping that satellite is going to be the answer for rural areas and others where the population density is
lower. Do you think that satellite and cable access to the Internet will get to middle America before DSL does?
What's interesting is that and this is why we're called the Association for Competitive Technology, is that it's the presence of that competition that will help drive DSL.
Yes.
And motivate the Bell companies to deploy it. So if they see that they're beginning to lose out on lucrative markets, and there's a lot of people who believe that rural markets could end up being very lucrative because of some of the isolation.
Yep.
That people want more access to electronic commerce, and people are calling the business-to-business electronic commerce the trillion-dollar secret. A lot of people say that will dwarf consumer electronic commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have farms ordering equipment, et cetera, via the web, people could be transacting real business, not just browsing. The Bell companies, I think, are keeping an eye on the other providers, and as soon as they start to see the possibility of losing business, I think you'll see them deploy faster.
Absolutely. And then the good news is a consumer might have two or three choices.
Exactly. And in some areas, they do now.
Yeah.
But to divide up camps, I mean, DSL is something that actually works over your phone line. Because your phone line is capable of carrying a really broad spectrum of sound that goes beyond what the human's ability to hear it. So until we have dogs on the phone, there's a lot of unused space on the phone line, and so they can carry a data signal on the same line that you're talking on. In fact, you can talk on it at the same time that you're on the modem.
Huh, yeah, because you got more than one channel, basically, don't you?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, it's like more than one. It really has to do with range, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the sound that's the high frequency.
Well, all that technical jargon and all that stuff eludes me. I'm not smart enough or educated enough to know about that.
The upside of it is that they can run it over your existing phone line, and that you can be on the phone at the same time, so you don't need to run a new line.
Yeah, that's what's exciting, because I had an ISDN line brought into my office. And we had to run a whole new line.
Right. You could do voice over ISDN, too.
Now, will the DSL be able to plug right into, what will it plug into? Will it be into a 56K modem or what?
No, there's a special modem for the DSL. For all of these new technologies, there's special modems.
Because
it's a different kind of technology.
Yeah.
It's not an analog signal. And that's the only way to give you something faster. I mean, that part of what we're having now with modems is that they're not going to get any faster, because a signal over a regular phone line can only go so fast.
Right. So you think 56K is topped out for modems?
Yes. I mean, there's some tricks that people can do on either end to compress the signals and things.
Mm-hmm.
You might get a little bit faster.
Right.
But, for the most part, that's going to be the top end.
All right.
But the prices of these DSL and cable modem things are really coming down. I mean, you're not talking about $20 yet, but you're talking about $50 a month to have speeds, that are six times as fast as you can get with a modem.
Absolutely.
And as competition increases, and as there's more
deployed. Stand by, Jonathan. I've got to interrupt you, folks. We've got to take a quick break. It's 29 after. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just remember the name of the show, the words all together, and the normal stuff in the back, and you'll be there, and that's where you can go to hear this show on demand if you want. That's the new feature that we've got on the site, and a lot more good stuff coming up along those lines. Jonathan Zuck is our special guest. He's the president of Association for Competitive Technologies, the information technology lobbying organization out of Washington, D.C. Would it be better to call you a trade group?
Well, yeah, we're a trade association,
and
not technically lobbyists.
But you probably could be.
My background's actually in the. I love your little introductions, because they bring forth memories of sitting down with my partners each month, looking around the table and saying, "Who needs money?" We knew we needed to pay the 60 employees, but we weren't all ourselves going to get paid.
That's right. You don't always get a check when you're the owner.
Yeah, exactly.
You recognize that.
Whose wife is making the most noise this month?
good. And that's where you say, someone says, well, I need shoes, and the other one says, yeah, but I need food.
Right, exactly.
And the food gets the nod.
It does.
I have some other things, Jonathan, I want to talk about, but before we get into some of my list, let's talk about a couple more things that are on your mind. And one of them is the issue of online privacy. In a recent hour, I had last hour, I had an interview with our human resources expert, and we talked about some of the issues around employees using the internet on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that comes up, obviously, is misusing of the internet on the job. He called it cyber slacking. and also, then you wind up getting into the issue of privacy of those
employees. Become the new solitaire.
Do they have any privacy expectations on the job? And then you've got all the other privacy issues, which is just making sure that Big Brother's not snooping around on my email. Help us sort all this out, please.
Well, I mean, it's a complicated thing because legally the activities, the work that you do at the office is actually owned by the office. So the emails that you send are technically owned by your employer. And the browsing you do is something that they have the right to control. I think that businesses are trying not to make that into a privacy issue by simply creating filters and things like that to keep you from getting to sites that they don't want you getting to, but they are able to record all of your activity on the web from their server because everything you do at the office on a network actually goes through a single machine on the way out.
If it's a network.
And if it's a network, exactly.
It may not be. It may be multiple connections. As you know, these days you can have individual PCs on every desk. And more than one, there's hardware and software available that will allow more than one person to connect to the internet over the same modem line, the same internet line.
Right. There is some software that's become available to do that. I mean, there's a sort of big time software that businesses use called proxy servers. Proxy servers, exactly, because they act as a proxy for the people on the network to get to the. To get to the internet, and so what that happens is to the internet it looks like one person's using it, but the proxy server is sort of going out and dispatching the requests of multiple people. But obviously, that's also a great centralized location to keep records of who went where and when and for how long.
What do you think this is all going to the privacy issue is all going to roll out? How do you think it's going to work?
Well, I mean, it's a difficult issue because there've been a lot of decisions that have upheld an employer's right to control. How their equipment gets used and things like that. One of the issues that's affecting privacy right now is in the area of the web and people, and this is something that's got a lot of people, mumbling in Washington, is the idea of going to a website and giving information about yourself and then what is then the people then do with that information.
Mm-hmm.
Can they sell it as a list to somebody else? And Amazon say, well, everybody that bought books about human sexuality, I'm going to sell to companies that sell pornography or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah.
We're not saying that Amazon does that, but
selling lists is an industry, folks. It's not just a sideline; it's a whole industry.
And Amazon most certainly does not do that.
Right.
But there's some work going on to figure out whether or not that needs to be regulated. Do we need to prevent companies from sharing information, or is it sufficient to simply tell customers what their policy is and let customers choose not to give the information and not to use the website if they mm-hmm. don't like the policy? So there's some real dissent about that.
What about, you've got the issue out here with child pornography, which is a horrible, horrible, malignant tumor on our society, and yet the people who are engaged in that are caught by the government tracking their activity over the internet. What's to keep the government from tracking mine and your activity?
Really nothing. I mean the other aspect of this is something called encryption. I don't know if everyone's familiar with that, but it's possible to take the things that you do, your emails, etc., and encrypt them in sort of like passing codes back and forth as a kid, where without a password, people can't read the information.
Even the government?
That's part of what the question is. Come back.
Yeah. Yeah, stand by. Alex, finish up that thought when we come back. And a lot of other good stuff, folks, when we come back after these messages. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassing, the Small Business Advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our special guest. The hour Dallas. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Jonathan Zuck is the President of Association for Competitive Technology. He's our special guest and our good friend and member of our Brain Trust. He joins us a couple of times a month to talk to us about the most recent technology issues out there, gadgets, software, policy, lots of different things, and we always have a great visit with him. Jonathan, please.
Sure. It's www.actonline.org.
Okay, tell us, take about a half a minute and tell us about your organization.
Sure. The Association for Competitive Technology is a IT industry trade association, basically fighting for free market principles in Washington to try and educate and increase cooperation with policymakers and try and preserve the economic conditions that have allowed the IT industry to flourish.
And
it was responsible for a third of the economic growth over the past 6 years, and we want that to continue.
And not just the big dogs are members of your organization. There are small folks like me.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, in fact, the majority of our members are small businesses, people that don't have the time to deal with these issues themselves, but that are affected by them.
Right, and they might be people who are small manufacturers or developers, maybe beta test sites or whatever, just small players in the big picture that are very much interested in the work that you're doing.
Yeah, that's really been the case. We've got a real following among small businesses because we concentrate on things like workforce deficit issues and regulation. I mean, when we talk about broadband, I mean, one of the issues is that regulation of broadband may slow down the deployment of it, and the majority of our majority of our members don't care whether AT&T or AOL provides the broadband. They just want it to be there.
We just want it, yeah.
Because it'll help facilitate their business.
What's a typical membership cost?
It costs $100 to join.
$100. All right,
folks.
So
that's probably going to change. So if you're going to join, then come on. But if you're an individual, you can join for free too, just to get on the newsletter.
All right.
We send out a pretty cool HTML-based newsletter every month with what's going on.
By the way,
I
haven't been getting mine. Would you check on that for me?
I will. Did you sign up as an individual?
No, partner? I thought you were going to sign me up.
Oh, all right. I'll have to make sure you do that.
Anyway, let's move on. Thank you for telling us about that, because I wanted to make sure people knew that it wasn't just Microsoft and Apple who were your clients. You've got lots of little folks out there that you represent.
Oh, yeah, 500 companies, most of them are small businesses.
And you're the fastest-growing trade association in the D.C. area, aren't you?
Yeah, in the industry, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's move on and talk about a couple of other things. This is kind of fun, in a way. You may not know about this, but Microsoft has been having a little bit of difficulty with their Spanish dictionary in Spain. And the reason is because some of the words are translating into offensive translations. For example, the feminine adjective ansiosa, which really should mean eager or greedy in English, was translated in Spanish meaning nymphomaniac, lecherous, sexually avid. So they're having a little trouble. And then here's one. By contrast, the masculine version of the word, ansioso, was described as covetous, yearning, painstaking, and ambitious.
Wow.
So the reason I bring that up is that when we're doing business overseas, we need to pay attention to some of the words that we use. You know, there have been some major products that were, you know, like 100-year products over here in the United States, that when they took them to another country, that word in that language was offensive, and so they literally had to change a major product name.
Oh yes, I mean, there've been a number of examples like that where the product didn't even have any meaning. The name didn't even have any meaning in English, and then it had meaning in the...
Yeah, it was like an acronym over here or something.
I can remember Jimmy Carter's travails in Poland.
Oh, yeah. What? Remind me of that. I remember the deal.
Well, he was giving a speech, and he ended up saying something with translated roughly to, you know, I want to have sex with Polish women,
yeah,
or something like that.
I remember that now. Yeah, you just got to be careful.
Yeah, I lived in Poland for a year, actually.
Is that right?
In 1980-81.
Uh-huh.
And they have a word, proszę, which is a little bit like bitte in German. In other words, it's used for please,
right,
thank you, you're welcome. It's used for you're welcome, et cetera, hello. And it's also used for, like, somebody knocks on the door, you know, come in,
uh-huh,
say proszę. But then there's also a word which is crocher, which means small pig.
Sounds very similar.
Yeah, they're very similar. One's an S with an accent over it, one's an SZ. So it's the difference between the SH sound of sheet and shoot. And that's, you know, sh and sh. You know, brochure and brochure are the two words, and so you can offend somebody just by telling them to come in.
That's amazing. Come in, small pig.
Right.
Let's move over and talk about another one. This is something that I know you know a little bit about, because this is something that you might even be one of your members. This is a new capability that Sidco, this company called Sidco out of California, has created an appliance, they call it literally, or a device that's called, it's actually called a mail station. And you can only email. You can connect to the internet, but you can only send and receive email. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I mean, the e-message is one of them, and then there are a couple of intelligent phones that built right into your the phone base, the ability to check your email.
So if you can't afford a $600 or $800 computer, you can buy a $150 machine, little appliance here to do email over the internet. But when we come back, we're going to talk about something that you might not even spend $150 for email when you can get a computer for free. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Let your trouble make them cry. Don't wait too long, wondering why. When everything goes wrong, you have to go on and do it all night.
All right. Small business owners know all about having to go on, don't they, Jonathan?
They sure do. Do
it or die. That's right. That's the small business mantra. Jonathan Zuck, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest this hour and our good friend. He's the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and I am very glad that you're here today and listening to us. Thank you very much for your business. I appreciate it. It's 54 after. Jonathan, we were talking about, when we took the break, I was mentioning this e-message capability that is available out there now for around $150 and for about $10 a month. If you sign up for an annual contract, you get a $100 machine and $100 worth of one-year subscription, so you save a little money there, about $50. But this is for people who, maybe there's an application for when you need to just get on the email. You don't need any other capability. But I can see where maybe your employees might have that. You might only want your employees to have email, but not necessarily full internet access. But some people might want to not spend the money that a PC costs, and also they wouldn't want to have the connect to pay for the connection. So they might want to go for one of these machines. But there's some new stuff coming down the pike here that may change all that, and that's either low cost or no cost PCs.
Sure, I mean basically the real cost of PCs is already falling below the $1,000 mark. Which is revolutionizing, you know, their availability. I mean,
in fact, I've seen some that are under $500.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what you're starting to see is people hoping to recoup money by selling you long-term internet service contracts and things like that. I mean, the less you pay for a computer, the better you should probably read the license agreement.
Yep. And see, this reminds me of cell phones. I remember the first cell phone I bought, I paid about $500 for.
Right.
And now they give them away.
They sure do.
I mean, obviously, they don't give away the best ones, but you can buy a pretty darn nice one for $50. And one of the things that I noticed in some of the research that I did, Jonathan, is that some computer manufacturers are even redesigning their products to make them look like appliances. They're building in stripped-down boxes with buttons, interfaces, and one-click access, I should say, to rudimentary software. And they're operating on some software, on some operating systems that you'd be interested in, or that you probably know about. One of them's called B, and the other one's Linux,
right.
And the other one's Amiga. And that has nothing to do with Microsoft.
That's true. There's the whole sort of information appliance revolution is this recognition that part of the reason that more people don't have PCs, about half of Americans have PCs, but part of the reason they don't have them is money, but part of it is that they don't want them. I mean, there's a whole collection of people that have no interest in using a spreadsheet,
right.
A word processor. They
right.
just wanted to browse the web and do
they
email.
Need access.
And so there's or some form of electronic commerce or something mm-hmm. very specific.
Right.
Some vertical market thing like an information resource or recipe thing, et cetera.
Right.
And so what you're going to see are more and more specialized devices. You know, maybe there's going to be an internet workstation that goes in your kitchen that lets you do your online grocery ordering and lets you get access to recipes,
and look,
timer and things like that, and doesn't do anything else.
Jonathan, we're almost out of time, but look what that's going to, think about what that's going to do to the hardware and the software industry. It's going to, the landscape is changing all over again, and I'm looking forward to you coming back and reporting to us again real soon on how that's happening, which we will do in 2 weeks from today, right?
That sounds right.
Thanks, Jonathan. Enjoyed it. You did a good job.
My pleasure.
See you later. Jonathan Zuck, ladies and gentlemen, with the Association for Competitive Technologies. I got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.